trust is a choice in the moment. Like, trust is something that gets built over time, and it gets built over time by a lot of small moments where you choose to trust yourself. And so,
all right, what is up, everyone? Welcome back to the podcast where we dive in on relationships, love, lust, dating, science, philosophy, psychology, so much more. We're also on iTunes, so make sure to leave us a review on there if you're tuning in from there. Spotify gets our updates too, so don't be shy with that. Or if you're watching here on YouTube, then hit that subscribe button, hit that bell button, get automatic updates, never look for another episode again. There's no fee to watch the show other than tell a friend. I'm so happy for this guest. I was on his show, and I was like, man, we got some really cool chemistry. So I was like, yeah, I would love to have you on my show. I would love to interview you. I would love to turn the tables on you because, man, you got so much stuff going on. And I was just saying how much the happy hour thing that you're doing this live stream. We'll talk about that. But yeah. Hayden's a certified success coach. He's a lifestyle entrepreneur. He's host of the Elevate Now podcast, which I'm going to be I think you're rolling that episode out soon, so mm-hmm. stay tuned for that if you guys want to hear me get interviewed on that show. But you had a pretty decent life before all this, I would say. I mean, you're doing your thing, but then you got kind of sick of what you were doing, and so let's dive right into that part of the thing, because I think that's where a lot of people are at right now during this quarantine. So Hayden, man, thanks for coming on the show, my man.
Absolutely, thanks for having me, Rob. Excited to be here.
Yeah, it's gonna be good. So yeah, let's start right there, man. Like, so let's give the audience a little bit of a picture to paint. So you were living the normal life, I guess. Went to university in Ohio, got a job working for LinkedIn.
Yep.
And then that went stagnant. Tell me about that.
Let's talk about right there. Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing to share is, like, I spent a lot of I would say like high school through college and then the first couple years of my career getting it right, like trying to do all the right things, like be everything for everybody. One of the things that has always been a struggle for me is people pleasing. And that's pretty, I didn't know it, but unconsciously that's pretty much how I built my entire life, was to please other people and to look impressive and seem impressive. And, you know, that's why I moved from Ohio, where I'm from and where I went to school, to California, was to work at a startup because that was cool and sexy. And, you know, there weren't a ton of other people that I knew that were doing that. And then same thing when I joined LinkedIn at the beginning of 2016, I joined as part of a rotational program for them. And, you know, it was an awesome experience. I mean, it even allowed me, you know, to move here to Chicago, which is where I'm at right now, at the end of 2016, October of 2016. But what ended up happening was I moved here for a sales role, and I spent about 4 months in the sales role. And it's a much longer story, but I ended up missing my sales quota, which is funny because people miss quotas all the time. Like, even the best salespeople miss their quota occasionally. But for me at the time, it was sort of this like life altering, it sounds dramatic, but like world ending event where I was like, you know, this is the one thing that I got hired to do, and I'm not going to be able to do it. And, so it really just changed my ability to interact with people. Like, I had a very hard time being present and like being able to connect with other people in my life because I was so anxious and stressed out about missing this quota. And so, you know, afterwards, when the month was over and I missed by two or whatever it was, and I was reflecting on what had happened, and I just started to come to all these realizations about, you know, why that had happened. And so much of it had come from my tendency to derive my sense of self-worth and value as a person from my accomplishments and what I was doing professionally. So anytime that any of that came under fire, it was immediately like my value and worth as a person, you know, was coming under fire, which is why I was so anxious and stressed out. And so when I realized that, and granted that happened over the span of a few months, when I started to come to those realizations, I, you know, basically said, I don't want to be here anymore. This isn't the right company for me. You know, this isn't the right role and the right opportunity for me. And I want to be doing what I want to do, which is, you know, working for myself
and having a lot more freedom and flexibility in my work and being able to design my life, you know, as I see fit and have an impact on people. So when I came to that, I decided that I was going to leave. So I left in mid 2017 and then jumped into coaching and have been in coaching ever since then.
Shoot, man, that's a lot of, you know, there's a lot to unpack there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the things that are coming to my mind is when you mentioned you were anxious, you were stressed, and you weren't happy, you felt like you were just missing something. And so, I mean, there are a lot of people out there right now probably thinking the exact same thing right now. So what's something that was the kicker for you? Like, what made you just kind of jump right full into entrepreneurship? I mean, that's a tough leap to take for anybody, especially in a state of anxiety, in a state of stress, or in a state of like flux, right? Yeah. So I guess, you know, talk to me about a little bit about the mindset that you had going into that, because I think that's important for a lot of people to digest right now.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things. So I think two of the things that maybe I didn't have conscious awareness of at the time, but that were beneficial in me making that jump. One was I grew up in a family that had a lot of entrepreneurs in it. So a lot of my family members own their own small businesses, which is great for me because it means that it's more normal. It means that I've seen it happen. I have an example of it working in many cases. My mom's owned an online retail store for 15 years, like all through middle school and high school. So when I decided that, you know, hey, well, one, the seed was planted very early that's probably the direction that I wanted to take. And then two, when I decided to do it, it wasn't that weird. It was like, oh, of course, like, you know, it's just time to go, you know, do the thing. I think second, the thing that I wasn't conscious of was I was just kind of ignorant. Like, I was just kind of like, oh, it'll be fine. I'm going to be able to do it, you know, whatever it is. So part of it was ignorance. Like, I just didn't know how difficult it was going to be or what was going to be included. That said, I think the thing that I can take ownership of and that I was, you know, actively practicing was this idea of self-trust. So, you know, it really started for me in high school. I joined the swim team in high school and had basically said, hey, you know, I'm going to go to States my senior year. That's what I want to do. This is the thing that I want to do. And so I worked my butt off for 2 years to be able to do that. And I ended up doing it. And what it taught me was if I put my mind to something, I can actually go out and create that thing. And so I said, I did the same exact thing in college. It was a little bit more ambiguous, but I think my overall goal was like, I just want to be the most well-known person, you know, in the college of business where I went to school, and I want to be involved in, you know, all the leadership positions and do all those things. So I did that. And then when I got here to making the decision about what I was going to do after I left my full-time job at LinkedIn, it was nice because I was able to look back and say, here are all of these instances where I said, hey, here's this thing that I want to go do. I don't know exactly how it's going to work, but I trust that I'll be able to figure it out as I go along. And so when I started to channel that, it was much easier to be like, hey, if I feel like, you know, leaving and starting my own business, even if I don't know necessarily how it's going to go, I trust that I'll be able to figure it out as I go along. And so I think the piece of advice that I would give everyone is trust is a choice in the moment. Like, trust is something that gets built over time, and it gets built over time by a lot of small moments where you choose to trust yourself. And so, I was fortunate in that I had these experiences already, and so my capacity, my muscles, so to speak, for trust were much larger. But if you're not there, like if you're just starting out, it doesn't mean that anything. It doesn't mean that there are any things that are less likely to come to you or that you won't be able to do. It just means that you have to more consistently practice trusting yourself in every moment. And so I think so much of it is just getting started in the general direction and trusting that you'll be able to figure it out as you go along.
Mm. Yeah, I like that. I'm curious though, was your the earlier influences in your life, were they pushing you towards entrepreneurship? Like, I mean, they were leading by example, but were they saying, hey, Hayden, this is something that you should look into? Or were they just kind of like letting you be, letting you kind of, you know, touch the stove when it's hot, do whatever you need to do? And
yeah.
And another thing I want to bring up too is I saw your Instagram. It looked like you're very, like a pretty artsy dude. You were into photography and things like that. So
thanks, dude.
Curious how all that like mixes in, because I know a lot of entrepreneurs are creative by nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I was just curious as if there was like a conflict that that you had, and you were like, no, you know what? This is more of a fit for me. I'm not this regimented 9-to-5er type of dude, right? Because that's how I was. I know for me, that's how it was. So I'm curious, was like your earliest influences pushing you towards that, or like what made you?
Yeah.
You know, what was that? It. What was that?
I think I was very fortunate in that my parents were incredibly loving and supportive, and they trusted me to figure it out. And I think part of it was because I just like didn't do much to get in trouble in high school. Like I was like a very like, I don't know if teacher's pet is the right word, but I was like a good kid in high school. I didn't like really get in trouble all that much. So like when it came to making decisions afterwards, like I'd already had a proven track record. Like, hey, I know what I'm doing. I'll be able to figure it out. So luckily I didn't have anybody pushing me one way or the other. And in fact, it was just incredibly supportive and, celebratory really. And so that was super cool. And then to your second question around like the creativity piece, I don't think that when I think about it, I haven't said or made that connection between the creativity and the me losing my desire to stay in a full-time job. But I think in some ways you're right. Because part of what was pushing me was this idea, pushing me out of that full-time job was, hey, here's this opportunity to go create this thing that's completely different and organic and creative and my own. And I get to say how it goes in every sense of the word. Like I get to build a business that's a reflection of me, and I don't have to fit into any sort of box. So from that sort of creative sense, like, yes, I was creating a totally different, you know, lifestyle for myself and a totally different routine and a totally different version of how it was supposed to go. From like a more like artistic kind of like creative perspective, it wasn't really something that came into play. The photography came about when I moved to Chicago, and I don't even know why I just said that. When I moved to Chicago, I basically said, I've never done hobbies before. I want to do hobbies. So I went and I took a photography class, and this was at the beginning of 2017, and it was like really great, and I loved it. And I got to take my camera out, and I love portrait photography. Like there's something about taking pictures of people that's really exciting for me. And so when I left my full-time job, that was one of the most direct things where I could look at it and say, hey, this is a skill that I could charge for. And like, this is a skill that I could build a business around. And so that's what I ended up doing really for my first year and a half in business, was like mostly photography work as I was getting the coaching business off the ground and the workshop business off the ground. It was mostly photography. I don't do it so much anymore, which is a shame, because every time I take my camera out, I'm like, why do I not do this more often? Because it's just very fulfilling and exciting. So in some ways, creativity played into it, but in other ways, not so much.
Yeah, you nailed it. It's kind of like a hobby/passion, right? Mm-hmm. It's something that's always going to be there. You're never going to really lose it. But it's amazing how, and it's not scalable, to be honest. I always tell my photographer friends, I mean, you're trading your time for money. But, you're already obviously understanding this conversation. But most of them don't understand it at the time. But they will get it. I think at the end of, year and a half or 2 years, they're going to realize, okay, this is not scalable. I'm really just creating another job for me. And then you made that transition. So that's awesome. I think that's great. And anybody who wants to start out doing something, it's better to pick up the skill first rather than try to create the business and then learn the skills later. Mm-hmm. I think it's always important to build a foundation.
I agree.
No, that's really important. So let's segue a little bit. This is a relationship show. So let's dive into a little bit about your personal relationships, man. Are you single right now?
I am single right now. Yeah.
Sweet. Are you currently dating and things like that? Or
so I'm not seeing anybody right now. Yeah. I'm not seeing anybody right now. I'm totally open to it. It was actually really interesting. It's really only been this is the second podcast where I've talked about my relationships, which is interesting because I've been doing a lot of like podcasts and interviews. It's not something that it's really only recently become like a part of my life and something that I'm focused on and something that I'm like openly talking about with other people. Cause it really wasn't until I moved to Chicago like 3 years ago that I ever started dating, period. And it really wasn't until last year that I had my first more serious sort of long-term relationship, which has been great, and happy to talk about that too. But I'm actively open. With everything that's going on because the quarantine and the social distancing makes it a little bit more difficult. But before all this went down, I was like actively out kind of looking.
Nice. Yeah, the day game has definitely dropped for me. It's all online now. I mean, if you're gonna be stuck in quarantine as a guy and you're single, I think get on every single dating app that you possibly can, maximize the chances because every girl is there. I'm telling you, the matches have gone up like crazy for
Yeah.
me too.
I'm checking
So,
out.
but anyhow, no, that's yeah, I want to take a little bit into that. So like, I'm curious. We had talked a little bit off air. You said your parents were divorced. Now I'm curious though. Now, I don't want to really talk about the dynamics of that, but it's more or less how it affected you. Is it something that deterred you from looking into long-term relationships? Is it something that made you kind of like, you know what, I saw the either the success or the unsuccess of that, and maybe it influenced you in a certain way where you were like, you know what, let me wait till I get my stuff together first, and then let me start openly, actively dating, or like it seems like that's what the thought process was like for you. So I'm curious to know what you were thinking.
Yeah, great question, man. Yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't ever thought about it in that way, so thanks for asking that question. I think, you know, it was never like a conscious connection that I made, like, hey, because I saw my parents do X, Y, and Z, like, this is the reason that I'm not dating or like actively looking for relationships. I think like my approach and my relationship with relationships came about just as a result of like the dynamics of the household. So, which might be sort of the same thing, but I think the thing that I, you know, now looking back that I saw is just was just like a lack of intimacy, really, like and a lack of like vulnerability and true connection in relationship. And even more so, it was like, hey, like let's act like it's all happy and cheerful and like and everything's great on the outset. So it was like sort of like it was kind of a mind fuck because part of me is like, oh yeah, everything's like my family's totally normal and everything's great and everyone's happy. And then like this whole thing goes down and I'm like, oh shit, like it there's all this stuff that was under the surface that just like never got talked about or just like it was never shared openly. So I think that's sort of like where I took my example for like what it meant to be in relationship with people, like in terms of intimacy, in terms of vulnerability, in terms of guardedness, and like being okay talking about those things. I think the role that I played in my family in a way was like mediator, like I was sort of like the in-between for everybody. And I think my experience of it at least was like I had a very small amount of room in which to operate. So a lot of it, a lot of my life was like being very small, making myself as small as possible. And hence the people pleasing that I mentioned at the beginning. Like, how do I just not ruffle any feathers and like not take up any space and just be so nice to everybody? And so, you know, because of that, like there were a ton, you know, you can imagine the effects that come from that sort of like way of being in those behaviors, you know, inside of relationships and especially romantic relationships. But I think it just separated me from my heart in a lot of ways. I ended up living in my brain for a very significant chunk and still tend to rely on it too much. But it just made me very heady and very logical and very out of touch with my heart. And I think that that's really important when you're talking about creating a relationship with someone or even sharing with them that you're attracted to them, like being in the process of like getting into a relationship with someone, like it takes having an open heart and like being willing to connect with someone, you know, from that space. So hopefully that answered your question, but those were just the thoughts that came up for me
Yeah,
in
no,
my
that was
prepping.
beautiful because for me, I personally as well can attest to that. Like I saw my parents live kind of sort of like this outside facade for a long time, and I witnessed them fight all the time, right? So like I would always watch them argue, and it would mess me up for a long time, and I thought that was normal, but it didn't really stop me from looking for relationships. I went into thinking, you know, I could change myself into not thinking that my patterns are going to be the same. And then little lo and behold, I'm in a relationship, and then the arguments start to happen just like my parents, right? So it's crazy how our influences can do that. But it's crazy also at the other end of the spectrum when you come on the other side of that and you can look as an outsider in and how that changes things for you. So
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I think everyone's got some flavor of it. Like, you know, I'm a firm believer that I think everyone should go to therapy, not because everyone has experienced like some super big T trauma, but like everyone has small T traumas. Everyone's family is like weird weird and like different and like sort of messed up in their own special, amazing, beautiful way. And so I think everyone could benefit from getting clear on like how they learned about relationships and the gaps that they still have between where they are and what it takes to operate in a mature, healthy relationship.
Yeah. And I do think time and communication has a lot to do with that. So as I witnessed my parents, fight and argue as a kid, I mean, they're a lot better now. They do all these weird coupley lovey-dovey things now. It kind of cringes me out. It cringes me out. But, you know, I love it because it's something that I never got to witness as a child. So that's kind of cool, man. This was a great little perspective that we gave, even just on, you know, just a little piece of, not forcing your children into things of that you want as well either. I think that was really important. My parents always wanted me to get that 9-to-5, and that's what made me rebel so much into doing these entrepreneurial type endeavors and things like that. So that's awesome, man. So you're single, looking for a relationship, lady. I was just about to say, ladies, he's single. Look, he's a handsome man.
Post myself, remember.
Just slide into those DMs. No, I'm just kidding. Give him a follow. You know,
there you go. Step one.
Like his post, interact.
Let's start there. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So now that's cool, man. I had a couple questions here, but you kind of answered that. Cool. With that whole thing, but now my curiosity is like, when you go into the coaching world now, right? Like, so you brought in all these life experiences. You've talked about, you know, your dynamic at home, and then you talked about your dynamic with your own personal life, going to work and having to figure that out. And now you're in the coaching world and you do all these workshops. You also talk to a lot of people, you interview a lot of people. So I'm curious to know, like, what are some of the I guess main themes that you're faced with right now, and some of the conversations that you're having like with these people, and why is it coming up? That's what I'm curious about.
Totally. So I think there's two lenses or two different areas to look at. One is the types of conversations that I mostly have with people, given just who I am and given the types of clients that I attract. And then I think there's the types of conversations that I have more recently because of everything that's going on and everything that's happening in the world right now. I think I'll start with the people that I normally work with. So I tend to attract and work with people who are similar to myself. So people who are people pleasers, overachievers, they've done all the right things. They went to a great college and they've got a great job at a great company. And they're a couple of years in and they're like, this sucks. This is not at all what I thought it was going to be. And I want to create something that's more me. I want to create something that's more authentic. So I say I help people get paid to be themselves in a sense, like creating an experience where you just get to show up 100% authentically as you. The types of conversations that I'm having with those people, a lot of times it first comes down to people pleasing. It's feeling like you can't own your voice and your power inside of relationships. Like it's always somebody else's agenda ahead of your agenda. And a lot of just like bending over backwards and letting people walk over you, not having very clearly defined boundaries inside of relationships or inside of what you're willing to take on or say no to at work. And so a lot of what I work on with people around that is like saying no. Like, how do you say no to people? How do you set boundaries? How do you, you know, trust your own value outside of what somebody else might think? So it plays a lot into like fear of judgment or fear of ridicule and those pieces. Another thing that I usually talk about with those folks is the amount of anxiety and stress that they have. Typically with, especially with people pleasers and people who use work as a means to elevate their own sense of self-worth, there's a lot that has to do around how much they work and how stressed out they are and how overwhelmed they are, because it tends to be that their thoughts are constantly about what they're doing. They're not doing enough. They're not doing a good enough job. They need to be doing more, because in so many senses, that's where they see it's like the end of the tunnel or the light at the end of the tunnel. Like once I just achieve these things, like then I will be enough and then people will like me and everything's going to be totally fine. So a big piece of that too is also supporting people and seeing the relationships that they have to work and seeing the relationships that they have to overwhelm, because overwhelm is a choice. Overwhelm is not something that happens to you. You choose to overwhelm yourself, which is something that I had to learn I'm still learning that lesson. But it's supporting people and seeing like where they can start to put those boundaries in place, where they can stop overwhelming themselves, where they can say no to things, and just reduce the amount of anxiety and stress that they have. So with the folks that I work with, that's typically the conversation that we're having. On the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, that makes
go ahead.
That makes a lot of sense. No, I'm saying that makes a lot of sense. And you can continue on with the other side. I'm curious to know.
Yeah. So the other side is just the conversations that I'm having given what's happening right now. So what's happening right now is a shift and a change unlike any we've ever seen. There's so much disruption as far as people's normal lives, normal patterns, routines, habits, that sort of thing. A lot of people are dying. A lot of people are losing jobs. A lot of people are losing all of their clients. So there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of scarcity. There's a lot of real pain and sorrow and grief. And so, you know, part of my conversation at the highest level with people is about what do you want to create for yourself in your life? That's your commitment. Those are the things that you're committed to creating. And how do you start to make decisions based on your commitments instead of circumstances, which are the things that are happening to you that you can't control, like the weather or even really time is a circumstance. Money a lot of times is a circumstance. So how do you make commitments or decisions from your commitments instead of how things look right now? It's almost like how do you make decisions from the future and in service of the future versus what's happening right now or what has happened to you? And so in a lot of senses, this thing that's happening right now is a circumstance. It's changed things. It's very much so changed things. Maybe you've lost employment. Maybe you've lost clients, whatever it might be. But it doesn't mean that there's not still opportunity there. And it doesn't mean that the things that you wanted to create are any less valid. Like your commitments are still your commitments. If your commitment was to make $100,000 before this pandemic, just because there's a pandemic doesn't change the commitment of making $100,000, right? And so what I work with people on is first and foremost, just acknowledging and processing the trauma and the emotion of what happened, because you have to start there. There's a lot of grief for folks. If you've lost your job or if you've lost all of your clients, there's a lot of grief there. And it's totally understandable that there would be a lot of grief, grieving over what your life used to look like or what your business used to look like. And so it doesn't make any sense to try and operate or take action on top of the grief, because grief-driven action is not going to be all that effective. Like you just probably won't produce the results that you want if you're operating on top of a lot of feelings, because you're not showing up your best. You know, you're not showing up as the best leader that you could be. You're just not as clear, really. So first and foremost is actually channeling and processing the grief and processing the feelings and processing the loss over what happened. And then once that's out of the space, once that's clear, you then have the opportunity to take a look and say, okay, based on my commitments, where do I go from here? Where's there to go? What's there to put into place? What action do I need to be in? Who do I need to talk to based on my commitments? And likely how you get to those commitments will look differently because of how things have changed, but it doesn't change the fact that you can still start to take steps towards that. So with the folks around, you know, what's happening right now, it's grieve first, feel all your feelings, and then take a look at where there is to go from there.
Yeah, I love that, man. Get out of your head. I tell that to people a lot of the time, and it's okay to be in your head. Men are usually the culprits of this. We're always in our minds trying to think logically and rationally and overanalyzing. But you know, that's the masculine part. But yeah. You know, it's I think what you're saying is really, really important, because we can't always spend time there all the time. We can't always be constantly on in our minds, because what you're saying is when we do that, we lose track of who we are at the core, our spirit, our soul, the things that make us, I guess, vibrate on a higher level, like joy, happiness, things like that. And, you know, it seems like you're very passionate, you are very passionate into helping people realize this. I can hear that in your voice. And so I think you'd make a really, really great coach for anybody listening in who needs that extra push, because, you know, one thing that I love to do is I love to put other coaches in front of, you know, my audience, because I know none of them are going to not all of them are going to resonate with me. Not maybe all of them might not like my coaching style. I am a firm believer that there's enough to go around. There's enough piece of the pie. And I guess I, you know, why, that's probably why I never really stressed out so much when this whole pandemic thing was happening. I never really got into that fear or scarcity mindset. And a lot of people do go there, which sucks, you know, but I think what Hayden is trying to say is trying to reassure you into making you believe that, hey, there's things in your control and things that are not in your control. Separate those two, get out of your head, feel a little bit more, be comfortable with that, and then let's go with that approach as opposed to, you know, haphazard, stressed out, all that crazy talk. And I love that, man. It's amazing to hear the parallels, because I do relationship coaching, which is totally different from, you know, trying to get yourself out there. And one of the things that was resonating that what you said was some people get stuck to an idea so much. So, and this happens in relationships too. So in relationships, they're called one-itis. You get one-itis for a girl. You put all your eggs into this one girl. She ends up dipping, and then your life is kind of messed up. And so the correlation that I'm trying to say is that, yeah, Corona is kind of like that girl who took off on you and devastated your life and made you, but you were so, you know, conditioned into thinking that you needed this. Anyhow, I think that parallel is so important, and self-love, the relationships that we have with ourselves is super truly amazing. So thank you for that. I'm going to take you to a part of the show where we get a little fun, man. We're going to do a little five random questions.
Yes, okay,
get
cool.
My audience a little bit more warm to you.
Love it.
I had this in my old podcast, and a lot of people were telling me, man, you got to bring that back.
Perfect.
So awesome. I'm going to bring it back. And all my guests love it too. So I enjoy them as well. So let's do this. All right, random five. So if you could be any animal in the world, what animal would you be and why?
Oh my goodness. I don't know. The thing that came up for me was like a hawk, like some sort of like bird of prey, because I think that would be like just super badass. And like being able to fly, that's cool. That's a win. So yeah, being a badass bird that can fly, I'm about it.
Nice. Yeah, I love that. Eagles, hawks, those kinds of things. They got crazy eyesight too. What is your favorite book, or is there something that you're reading right now that you like to share with us?
Yeah. Oh man. Can I give multiple answers?
Yeah, you're okay, welcome. Sweet. To most people do.
Hard to man, put, I just like reading a lot. Yeah. Okay. So my two favorite books are The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. Incredible, incredible introduction to a lot of like self-help, personal development, and spirituality concepts. It's like my go-to when I meet someone who's on the same wavelength as me. I'm always like, have you read this yet? Like, you need to read this because it's that stellar and it's that well written too. Like Eckhart Tolle wrote Power of Now. Great book, but like he writes at this level that's like up here. So you kind of have to like be up here to like fully understand it. But Michael Singer, it's like, it's way more, it's not dumbed down. It's just the way that he writes it is very, he uses a lot of analogies. So it's easy to follow. The second book is Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari. I can't remember what the order is, but it's a brief history of Homo sapiens as a species. Incredible book. Completely changed the way that I think about people and humanity. I talk about it at least once a week. The last book that I am in the, I actually just started it, and I think it's going to be a really like profound one for me. It's called Profit First. And it's basically a different way of looking at your business and accounting, where you basically just take profits out first and then you pay your expenses. And it sort of forces you to get clear on how to operate your business in a more lean fashion. So excited to dive into that one.
Yeah, no, I'm writing all these down. I love reading. I love listening to books now, cause like, mm-hmm. I don't have time to read.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, whenever I get new audiobooks, I'm always looking for titles and stuff like that. So this is amazing.
Nice.
All right, cool. If you could hop on a plane anywhere, after, you know, obviously post quarantine, where would you teleport to and why?
Barcelona, Spain, for sure. Mm. I have just this very romantic idea of going to Barcelona. I took uh, like
Well, I took Spanish all throughout high school, and then I took Spanish through college too. And I don't know it as much anymore, but like, I love the idea of being able to go there and like interact with people and like pick it back up. And there's just something, that seems very romantic about Spain. So as soon as all this travel bans are lifted, that's where I'm going.
Nice. Curious, are you into Latina women? This is just a side note.
I don't think I've ever been with a Latina woman, so. I heard they're
interesting characters. Just kidding. We're all human. Anyhow, let's get to the next question. If you could meet someone who has passed away and have a conversation with them, it doesn't have to be a famous celebrity or anything. Who would it be and why?
Oh, man.
I get a lot of presidents on the show.
Really? A lot of presidents? There are no dead presidents that stick out in my brain as people that I want to connect with. It's a really great question. I don't know, maybe Jimi Hendrix. I think that would be an interesting, or Kurt Cobain.
Nice.
That'd be an interesting conversation.
Were you into a lot of rock music growing up and alternative? Or?
I'm not going to change my answer. That's what I'll keep it as. I think it'd be interesting to connect with them and talk with them.
Yeah, that's dope, man. Yeah, that's why I like these questions, because you get to uncover layers of people that you don't really get to hear. So, this is the last of the random five. Okay. I love asking this question. Do you have any weird eating habits? Do you ever get called out at the dinner table for something?
Weird eating habits. So I'd say it's less weird eating habits and more just stuff, like weird stuff that I eat. And it's not weird. It's just the amount that I eat it is weird. Like, I eat so much hummus. And I also eat a ton of prosciutto. Like, I don't know what it is about prosciutto. I literally will just go to the store and like buy packages and then just eat it like straight out of the package. Something about salted cured pork or ham or whatever
it is. I think it's so melt. It's so, if you ever have really, really good prosciutto, it has a little bit of a melt in your mouth. So I know that. Salty. I know that feeling.
Love it.
So good. But that qualifies too. I've never met a hummus overeater. So that's definitely.
I'm the first. That's cool. Okay, perfect.
Well, that's awesome. That brings us to the end of the random five, man. Right. You did a really great acknowledgement of me on your podcast, and I just want to return the favor, man. You're a relentless, heart-centered, badass entrepreneur, man, and I see that right through the screen.
Thanks.
I'm hoping that we can continue this connection and maybe hook up in real life and maybe do a little bit of a collab, because I think your energy is just positive. It's so, you're just on the right path with so many things, and the way that you think, I see a lot of myself like similarly in you as well. And I just love how you can take topics and make them really, really complex, but then also make them very, very simple for people to understand, which I think is great. And for anybody to take on, that's a great coaching style. So I appreciate you, dude, and for coming on the show and for giving me all that wisdom and that knowledge, and you didn't have to. And so appreciate you, and I really wish you all the best in your future. I know it's going to be a very, very, very bright one for you, man.
Thanks,
and, I can't say any more good things about you, dude. So thank you, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
I want other people to, for sure, man. I want other people to get a hold of you as well. You got a podcast out called Elevate and Elevate Now. So I'll link that up in the show notes, but where else can people find you? Where are you mostly hanging out? How do people get involved even with your coaching?
Yeah, totally. And real quick, it's just the Elevate podcast. Just if people are looking for it, it's just the Elevate podcast. And as far as folks who are looking for me, best place to go is HaydenHumphrey.com. That's my website. I've got all my stuff listed on there. There's my Instagram handle scrolling at the bottom of the screen. Hayden does himself.
For ladies.
Yeah.
Ladies.
The last thing I'll plug is I actually started a daily live stream every weeknight. It's called Happy Hour with Hayden Humphrey. No drinks. I just bring on random guests and we talk about stuff that's making us happy, things that we're grateful for. We play some fun like mini games and activities and just about 20 minutes. It's just like a nice little bite size clip of goodness and some silliness, especially I think with everything that's happening right now. I'm just trying to bring more positivity and lightness to everybody. So if you want to check that out, it's just haydenhumphrey.com/happyhour.
Yeah, I love that. I'm glad you plugged that because that's what I was just glorifying you on. I was telling you the marketing behind that was genius and the idea is just such a great thing. So I think, and it's entertaining. So everybody who likes to get some online content in, I suggest you get at least this in on a daily basis. So follow the Happy Hour at Hayden Humphrey.
Thanks, dude.
All right, so I'll put that all in the show notes. We are going to end it here with one last question. And it's because a lot of people do find me via a heartbreak, whether it be divorce, separation, just like a really bad breakup or whatever. And sometimes it could be even just a death in the family. So like they're really, really tormented and they don't know how to handle that. And so they're down and out basically. And I always try to give the best advice that I possibly can around heartbreak and something that, you know, that you would do in your situation, because we've all experienced heartbreak at one point or another. And so I'm curious, like, what would you say to either to yourself or to somebody who's going through something like that?
Yeah, I think don't go through it alone. And the second and more important piece of that is finding either a group or a person who can hold space for you. And by hold space, I mean someone who can just be with you, not try and fix you, actively listen to you, just be there present with you as you go through the things that you're going through. Because I think one of the things that keeps heartbreak and shame and guilt stuck in place is our relationship to it. It's when we view it as wrong, when we view it as not okay, or we have some sort of interpretation of the emotion, that's what keeps the emotion stuck in place versus actually allowing it to just work its way through us. And then it completely dissipates and we're on the other side of it and things become more clear. So I think my biggest piece of advice, like I said, is don't go through it alone and find someone who can hold space for you, whether that's a coach or a therapist or just a really good friend.
That's beautiful, man. Well said, dude. Hayden Humphrey, thanks for coming on the show, my man. This is awesome.
Thanks for having me, man.